it was, the thing was lush. Work with that, this could be a lawsuit. Apple star, it was, the thing was lush. Worship the Alice the Crowley. Apple star, it was, the thing was lush.
Back. You are listening to Robert Ravolt's Incendiary Radio. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackman. I've got my special three buckets of rocks for you, getting ready to start bucket number two for our Palm Sunday special edition here. And so this is the Palm Sunday special edition, Eyes Wide Shut, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah show. All right, so we're got into the end of the Iron Era. So this is, the Iron Era is coming to an end from 0 AD to 2000 AD. And this is the age of Pisces, the fishes. And the fish are the exoteric symbol. And, of course, the esoteric symbol is Virgo. Right, so this is why the building of the church, the symbols of the fish and the Virgin were the two main icons. Just like in Aries, it was the ram and the scales of Libra, because Libra was the esoteric and the Aries was the exoteric. And like with Taurus, where you had the bull as the exoteric and the scorpion as the esoteric. So now we're in the age of Pisces, and the two symbols are, of course, the fish and the Virgin. So, you go through the life of Christ and the Gospels, and then you start with the Passion Week with Palm Sunday, Jesus riding into the city after preaching throughout the countryside. Now he's going into the city, and the first thing he does is causes a little ruckus at the temple. Right, casting out the money changers, et cetera. And this, of course, got him on the radar of the powers that be. And this is, that system of star chamber justice, where you don't get to face your accuser. You are being judged by people in the shadows, that you do not know that there are people in the land of Nod, east of Eden, that are deciding your fate of what's going to happen to you for merely telling the truth that they don't want exposed, right? So this is the big thing. And so then, of course, they have the crucifixion, and that everything changes, right? So then 70 AD, you have Jerusalem defeated by Rome. The temple is destroyed. 135 AD, Jerusalem is totally destroyed. Jews are prohibited from the city. And this is the beginning of what we know as the diaspora. In 180, Arianus composes the official Christian Bible with four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Then in 374, St. Ambrose is noted as saying, and I quote, "The Jews are the most worthless of all men. They are lecherous, greedy, rapacious. They are perfidious, murderers of Christ. They worship the devil. Their religion is a sickness. The Jews are the odious assassins of Christ. For killing God, there is no expiation, no indulgence or pardon. Christians may never cease vengeance, and the Jew must live in servitude forever. God always hated the Jews. It is essential that all Christians hate them as well." Right? So that's from St. Ambrose. How did we get from St. Ambrose to people like John Hagee of Christians United with Israel and Franklin Graham of Samaritan's Purse, I ask you? But in 1066, you have the Norman invasion led by William the Bastard, William the Conqueror, William the Fat, depending on who you talk to. And, of course, this was largely financed by Jewish money. In 1099, the Priory of Zion was founded in Jerusalem by a French king, Godfrey de Bouillon. And in 1118, under Pope Innocent III, the French knights formed the Knighthood of God, or the Knights Templar. And that was the big scam. The Knights Templar were basically the enforcement arm of the Priory of Zion, much like, you know, the modern Zionist movements have the Freemasons. You know, so this is, they were the money collectors for the money lenders. 1126, the Knights Templars returned from Jerusalem and emerged as celebrities and tour England, France, and Scotland. They were given vast sums of money and land. And basically, the story goes, they dug beneath the Temple Mount and found a curious treasure, right? And returned, but they did not know what they had, and they thought it was something to do with Solomon's temple. But my working hypothesis has always been they basically found all the materials from an earlier matriarchal fertility cult system with all the secrets and deceptions and codes, etc., and all that order that we talked about in the last break or the last section. And they basically took the books of the dragon and they transposed it for the beast. Basically, in the old system, the women made up the system of the hidden hand dragon. They were going to now recreate it as with them in power as the beast, right? And this is mentioned in Revelations. So they bring that back and then start to decipher and decode and translate this system and incorporate it into the Torah. And this would become the Talmud. This would become the Kabbalah. This would become the Zohar. This would become the Tarot. This would become the sacred magic of Mabramelin the Mage. Right? So they're basically completely revamping Judaism with this material of basic black magic that they have found. And they start imposing it, and a lot of it had to do with blood magic, right? Torturing and sacrificing to drink the blood because it's rejuvenating, right? And all that thing about the evil queen drinking the blood to stay beautiful. That's a kind of a reality. And so this dark system then gets distributed to all the learned chicken swingers throughout Europe, and they set up their own little slime mold cells of these black magic power systems where they become money lenders, they become pimps, you name it, and it's just organized crime and black magic. And then they start getting pushback. In 1182, Philip II expels them from France. 1215, you have the Magna Carta trying to figure out a way to deal with them. Even though the Magna Carta was signed, by 1290, the Jews were expelled from England. 1306, they were expelled from France again. 1307, Friday the 13th, every Knight Templar in France was arrested. What's curious about that is, you know, many of them on the inside got the call, right? Got the Jew call, like on 9/11. And many Knight Templars and Priory of Zion disappeared with the treasure and the ships. And many people posit that basically one of the things that they had found were maps of the New World, you know, that used to be part of the network. The matriarchal system, and so they became the Knights of the Caribbean, or the, excuse me, not the Knights of the Caribbean, the Pirates of the Caribbean. So you had the Knight Templars becoming the Pirates of the Caribbean, and they were basically all homosexual Jews, right? And so it's interesting that that storyline is slowly coming out, that, you know, this whole thing of the Pirates of the Caribbean were homosexual Jews, just homicidal, pathological thugs, you know, Meyer Lansky's of their day with ships, right? So 1458, the sacred magic of Mabramelin the Mage begins to be distributed throughout Europe, and this flat out talks about, you know, sacrifice of Gentile children for magical purposes. 1481, the Spanish Inquisition is formed to investigate these crimes, and they found people doing this, and, you know, they carried out sentence, and you had 2,000 burnings in Spain under Ferdinand. And these were people that were doing horrible things, and all the records are there of these people got trials under the Inquisition. Yet the Jewish media today says, oh, we were victims of that mindless persecution that was completely based on nothing. It's like, no, it was quite based. It was quite founded. And then in January 13th, 1489, the Grand Sanhedrin sent a letter to the Jews of Spain, basically telling them to convert, but never let the law of Moses leave your hearts. And then it goes through the thing about make your sons merchants that they may despoil Christians of their goods. Make your sons doctors and apothecaries so they can take away Christian lives. Make your sons canons and clerics so they can destroy the churches. And make your sons advocates and lawyers so they can mix in the affairs of state and put Christians under your yoke so that we may dominate the world. So, you know, even though they're getting thrown out of Spain, they are not standing down at all. They're like, we're going to rule the world. Just, you know, do these things and infiltrate. And this is where you start seeing the big infiltration of the Jews moving from their ghettos, their little supremacists, we don't want to associate with you filthy goyim, to coming out into the affairs of the goyim state. And then 1492, of course, the Jews are expelled from Spain. This is when Columbus is doing his big ride to the New World. And then in 1614, you had examples of these black magicians like Elizabeth Balfoy Exed, who was caught, you know, basically killing young women and drinking their blood and bathing in their blood, torturing them. Hundreds of young women between 1585 and 1609. The highest numbers of the trial were 650, and she was the character inspiration for the Countess in the Diablo game Diablo 2, right? So they, she was just that, you know, I am going to do spirit cooking, right? Then 1626, modern-day Turkey Zabatai Zevi is born. And he would declare himself to be the founder of the Messianic Jewish movement and declare himself the Messiah and basically have a doctrine of, salvation through indulgence for practical purposes, where, you know, you just take all the laws of Moses and do the opposite, and we will bring so much evil into the world, the Messiah will have to come to sort it out. And the rationale was, everybody can't be good, and so that would be one way for the Messiah to come. If everyone was good, the Messiah would come, but if everyone was evil, the Messiah would come. So it's easier for everyone to be evil, so we should just push evil throughout our network, right? And you have to remember that during the diaspora, the Jews had cells in every major European city, and they were running the gambling operations, the prostitution, blackmail, you name it. So they were, you know, constantly getting their tentacles into local government to sabotage it. This is that occult forces, right? 1656, you had the Jewish resettlement in England. 1666 is when Zabatai Zevi declares himself the Jewish Messiah, and it's also the Great Fire of London, right, that destroyed all those cathedrals, all those churches, all those Christians, but just happened to clear the way for the city of London. How convenient. And then in 1694, you had the creation of the Bank of England, and suddenly the English lost the power of their money. It became a fractional reserve system, a usury system. Then in 1717, you had the Grand Freemason Lodge of England established. And when you look at this, how much Freemasonry plays a role, it kind of filled in the gap from where the Knight Templars left off. And everything about Freemasonry is Jewish. And the end game of every Freemason, whether they realize it or not, is to rebuild the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem. They think they're building the third temple, but yeah, that is their mission statement. This is their goal. And as a young man, I thought being a Shriner was something to aspire to, and the prerequisite to be a Shriner is to be a Freemason. So I went through all the, you know, first, second, third degree, the apprentice, the fellowcraft, the master mason, and the Blue Lodge, and it's all about the building of Solomon's Temple. And then I went through the York Rite for the advanced degrees. You can either be a York Rite Mason or a Scottish Rite Mason to be a Knight Templar. I was planning to do both, but I chose York Rite first, and it's all about the history of the Knight Templars digging beneath the Temple Mount, finding something, and, you know, bringing it back to Europe and setting up the Zionist movement. And the Zionist movement was to reclaim Israel and rebuild the city. And then the Jews were going to rule the world from Jerusalem and bring every other nation to their knees, right? And this is all revenge on what was done to them. And this is one of the things you realize, that, you know, the other is not a compassionate people. They are not a forgiving people. This is not in their makeup. Europeans are a go-along-to-get-along people. We have to deal with hard winters where everybody's in tight quarters under bad conditions. You learn to get along. You learn to forgive trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, right? You learn to turn the other cheek to make sure before you escalate a fight that the person that you're talking to really is smacking you in the face, not that you just took it wrong and they're like, what did I do, when you counterattack? You make sure, you know. But once you've determined that they are indeed smacking you on both cheeks, and that's a different story. That doesn't mean that you then give up. It just means that you double check first, right? But with Jewish culture, you know, one of the things I have learned, especially since 9/11, there is no forgiveness. There is no compassion. There is no empathy in Jewish culture. It is all about, you're either with us or you're against us. And if you have made one of them mad, you have made them all mad, right? And so this is, you know, the beginnings of this push of Zionism, is getting all of these Gentile men, and they would go and find the people with ambition that like to sin, right, and get them away from those churches. And then all the Masons get together and they do the stuff that you can't do around a Christian church crowd, right? This is the people who want it to drink, want it to gamble, want it to womanize, you know, go out whoring, etc. And so you have this vice that's associated with the connection between Jewish power that has always provided those things to the dismay of the church, to the Freemason lodges, right, and then the Shriners, and then you keep going up to the Jokers, etc. But it's all about, you know, getting invited to the party and the inner circles where all the debauch stuff happens, right? So you see this pattern of bringing the innocents in, thinking they're doing one thing, and then corrupting them. And once you've got them corrupted, you also have them blackmailed. And this is that bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, bury aspect that I always talk about with the Meany method. You know, this is how they operate. And so you go and you get talked into doing something and you get filmed, and now they've got you for life, right? And they will give you whatever you need as long as you're doing their bidding. But the second you turn against it, all that just goes away, And then it's, you know, you shut up. If you try to reveal everything, we'll kill you. We'll kill your family. We'll kill, you know, your children. You know, this is how they operate. And it's a revenge culture. And every day they get up and talk about that they're going to go, you know, on this revenge against Rome, and, you know, that they will someday have the temple, you know, next year in Jerusalem is the battle cry. And is it good for the Jews? You know, forget everyone else. So, you know, that was so key that you have this secret society, this system that exists within a system that, you know, you got the completely hidden structure of power, you know, that nobody else can see. And this is that idea of, you know, the land of Nod east of Eden, that this is the shadow world that is only seen by the initiates, that, you know, people who know how to recognize each other, you know, that's why Freemasons always wear Masonic rings and stuff like that. And so that they can recognize each other. But this is what this system is. And when you go back to those old fraternity fertility cult systems, it was all about, you know, who had access to the inner circles. And you had your day guards, your drones for the day, and your night guards. And this is symbolized by the two pillars of Solomon's temple, Boaz, the day enforcers, or the authorities, and then Jake and the night authorities. Now, you'll find the word Boaz, you know, a thousand times, not a thousand times, but several times in the Bible. It's the person upstanding in the community that everybody knows out there in the light, but you will not find the word Jake in the Bible. And this is because it's part of that hidden cabal. This is in Masonic symbolism, the like the sons of Lamech, Jubalum. Those were the three ruffians that killed Hiram Abiff as the temple was being completed, right? So this is that hidden hand, you know, the mafia. This is that gang that's ruthless, you know, with us, and you don't see it coming. You know, you don't even know. There's star chamber justice against you, and so you can be condemned and you don't even know. And you see this sentiment fast forward into when Theodor Herzl writes The Jewish State in 1887. So I'm trying to get my notes here. Yeah, 1896, Theodor Herzl writes The Jewish State, and he's basically saying, okay, it's time for all of these cells and all of these white countries to come together to basically manifest what the Grand Sanhedrin was saying in that letter in 1489, that, you know, we are now going to do our power push. And then you had in 1897, the first World Zionist Congress held in Switzerland, founded, you know, chaired by Theodor Herzl. And this is where everyone got their marching orders, right? And those marching orders were known as the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And it's basically, this is our plan to take down all of these white Christian nations. Right. So you see this, you know, stepping stone between, you know, when the Freemasons get involved, secret societies, and also just the Rothschild banks. Because, you know, when Rothschild sent his sons, trained them in the alchemy of money creation, and sent his sons to all the capitals of Europe, and those same capitals would be pushed to war with each other within just a few years based on his machinations. And this would be just compounded with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, because then you would see World War I break out. You would see the Bolshevik Revolution and terror of, you know, 66 million Christians killed. You would see the Holodomor. Then you would see the Armenian genocide. And, you know, many of us think that, you know, the American uncivil war, as we call it, you know, the U.S. civil war between the North and the South, was in fact a Bolshevik revolution. This was, you know, Abraham Lincoln and his buddy Karl Marx saying, we're going to completely undo everything the original republic was supposed to be and set this up as a Soviet state. We're going to use all these legalese terms to redefine the population and come up with this civil rights and make everyone equal. And it's like, you know, people have to understand that Lincoln did not free the slaves. He just nationalized the plantation under this Jewish communist model. Right. And this is why you still see so many Southern flags in the South, because people realize that, you know, it was a Bolshevik coup against the whole point of the great experiment in self-rule. And then you start seeing all the assassinations of anybody who stands in their way. For example, President McKinley in Buffalo, New York, was shot by anarchist Jew Leon Kogslov, you know, and just World War II would have been averted if Huey P. Long had not been assassinated by hardcore Zionist Jew Carl Weiss, right? So you just see all of this, you know, leading up to where we are, this idea of the infiltrating and basically turning everything to the will of this world Zionist project. And then in 1903, when the protocols were published, there was complete outcry that, oh, it's that they aren't real. That is a forgery, you know, and they keep saying forgery. They never say they're fabricated. They just say they're a forgery, meaning they were a copy. And if I make a Xerox copy of a text, it's still the correct text. You know, it might be a forgery of the original, but it is still accurate information. And when you look at people like Henry Ford and, so many others that were saying this is a clear and present danger. The international Jews are taking out the family unit. They're taking out the church. They're taking out our business. They're destroying our banking. They're destroying our wealth. You know, this is the, you know, what we're up against. And so you just now see this series of wars, you know, leading up, and every time it's Jewish banksters that are financing both sides. And this is where I come up with the let's you and them fight, right? So it's this idea of they're manipulating both sides, and you expand that, lets you and them fight, and you get the Cartman drama triangle of, you know, the victor and the persecutor and the rescuer, right? So anyway, you are listening to Robert Ray Volt's Incendiary Radio. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
To miss. Oh, there's nowhere I haven't heard. Balls even there beneath that all.
Back. You are listening to Robert Ravolt's Incendiary Radio. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, a.k.a. Blackbird 9. I'd like to welcome everyone back to the Trading Post. Hope you're having a good morning now. I guess it's not a good night now. It's a good morning. We've moved into the a.m. here on the East Coast. So anyway, this is the special Palm Sunday edition that I put together for y'all. I hope you're enjoying it. And it's entitled Eyes Wide Shut, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. And so we were talking about the creation of the Freemason lodges. And one of the most notorious Freemason and OTO hidden secret society guy out there, who was basically the point guy for the Illuminati plan of infiltrating all secret societies and corrupting them was Aleister Crowley. And he was born on the 12th of October, 1875. And on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of 1904, he would dictate a very curious work called The Book of the Law. And he did that in Cairo, Egypt, and he was about age 29 at the time. And in this, he describes the law for the New World Order, for the Age of Aquarius that was coming. And we talked, you know, in the first part of this about how the last time we went into the Aquarian Age was right after the last Ice Age. And this was what we call our T6 Gold Age. And that was the last time we went into the Age of Aquarius. Now we're going into the Age of Aquarius. And in Crowley's book, he takes a very Zabbatai Zevi, Jacob Frank, Rothschild, dark magic, you know, evil is more powerful than good approach. And it's all about sex magic, and it's all about the destruction of the Christian church. So it's all about the destruction of the family, the extended family. It's all about the destruction of private property, free will, etc. But he cloaks it in, you know, do what thou will shall be the whole of the law, love under will. And so the way they call this love, it's like when the Jews describe tikkun olam, oh, we're fixing the planet, by getting rid of all the white people, but it's a noble thing we're doing. So if we use the word love, it makes it sound good. And this was one of the big foundations of what would become the counterculture. It's all this free love based on this Zabbatai Zevi model of sex magic, right? And then in 1917, to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the Freemason Lodge, the Grand Lodge, the King George V establishes the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire to be an order of chivalry. And the order's motto was for God and the Empire. And basically, it is yet another circle of the elite, those inner circles. And the lowest member is member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, or the MBEs, officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, OBEs, commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, CBEs. Then you have Knight Commander or Dame Commander, and then finally Knight Grand Cross of the British Empire. So you see the Templar influence here, the Masonic influence, and of course, it's, nothing to do with Jesus in there at all. And, for God and empire, it's whose empire are we talking about here? And then in 1926, on January 3rd, George Martin was born in London, England. He would go on to be the producer of the Beatles. And in January 26, 1928, Stanley Kubrick would be born to a Jewish family living in New York City in a Manhattan borough, right? So Stanley Kubrick comes from that system of hooked up Jews into this land of Nod, east of Eden, that nobody else sees except for people that can get access. And you don't get access if you're not a meanie beanie chicken swinger, right? So it's interesting that you would have these two media phenomenons, the artwork of or the films of Stanley Kubrick, alongside the rise of the Beatles. So these two people would be, or two groups would be, feeding off each other in this counterculture versus culture war that would come about after World War II. Then February 18th, 1933, Yoko Ono was born in Tokyo. September 1931, Brian Samuel Epstein was born in Liverpool, England. He was the homosexual Jew manager of the Beatles when they were first getting started. 1935, this is a little calculations based on stuff I've pieced together. The person who is said to have replaced Paul McCartney is William either Campbell, Shepherd, or Martin. I contend his real name is Billy Martin. And the question is, yeah, he was born in 1935, making him 32 at the time that the Beatles were doing the Christmas fan club record, right? And there's a very cryptic part where he's being asked how old he is by George Harrison, right? So this is the first time he appeared on the record. And if you look at the I Am a Funny material, This Way, That Way, and Sideways, it seems to point that he claims Aleister Crowley as his biological father, and his mother's name is possibly Lily. And he was always a bit older than the rest of the crowd, and that was part of the thing they had to cover up, was that, you know, he was much older than everyone else in the Beatles. Then 7th July, and he's also Jewish. That's the other thing. Circumcised Jew, that's into dark Crowley magic. That gets put in the Beatles to replace Paul McCartney when he was taken out. So 7th July 1940, Richard Starkey is born, otherwise known as Ringo Starr. He was also a Jew in Liverpool. 4th of October 1940, John Winston Lennon is born in Liverpool, England. And 24 September 1941, Linda Louise Eastman would be born in New York. So it's interesting that Linda Eastman would be raised in that same Jewish community of New York that Stanley Kubrick would be raised in. 13 October 1941, Neil Aspinall is born. He would be the Beatles' manager in charge of Apple Records, right? Then 18 June 1942, the real James Paul McCartney was born in Liverpool, England, and his mother, Mary, worked as a nurse in the maternity ward. He had a younger brother, Michael, who's known as Mike McGear, who had a interesting career himself. He was born in 44. And Paul McCartney was baptized as a Roman Catholic. And this is the thing, you know, both Paul and George, you know, for the longest time held on to their Catholicism. John, not so much. Ringo, not at all. But, you know, Paul was, you know, the good Catholic kid, right? So, then finally in 25 February 43, George Harrison is born in Liverpool, and he was also Catholic. And 7 January 1944, Peter Michael McCartney was born. So again, that's Paul's little brother. Then on December 1st, 1947, Aleister Crowley dies in Hastings, England. And 10th December 1961, Brian Epstein would sign the Beatles. And then 11 January 63, the Beatles' song Please Please Me was released in the UK. And then in February, it was released in the US. So this is the beginning of Beatlemania. Interesting that 1964, the Beatles were banned in Israel because they were seen as a degenerate force. Right. And so the Beatles were not allowed to be played on the radio. The records weren't for sale, apparently. And they definitely couldn't go there on their world tour, but they could go everywhere else and corrupt the youth. Right. And it was not until 2008 when the guy who calls himself Paul McCartney played in Tel Aviv as part of their friendship promotion. But we'll talk about that in a bit. Then January 1st, 1965, Hugh Schoenfield publishes The Passover Plot. And this was a book by, you know, this guy who's all about destroying, it's like critical theory on Christianity. It's basically breaking down the passion. It's like, oh, this is wrong with it, this is wrong with it, this is wrong with it. And this book would have a big influence on John Lennon. 1966, John Lennon would say, show business is an extension of the Jewish religion. Show business is an extension of the Jewish religion. So, you know, who controls the, entertainment syndicate? So 29 August 1966, the Beatles performed their last concert at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. 13 September 66, Paul McCartney appeared on the Melody Maker Awards. This would be the last time the real Paul McCartney would be caught on film this has led to rumors that Paul McCartney had left the band. And then in October 66, Brian Epstein put out a press release saying that Paul McCartney had not left the Beatles and they're not breaking up. However, they're not planning to tour anytime soon. Then November 8th, 1966 is the Tuesday that Yoko Ono opens her art show, Unfinished Paintings, at the Indica Gallery in London. And then in the 9th of November, 1966, that Wednesday, the official story is that James Paul McCartney, was killed in a car crash and was replaced. And this is the foundation of, the Paul is dead part. And then what's interesting is if you look at the I Am a Funny material, it looks like Paul McCartney had been exposed to all the decadence of that inner circle and was not only threatening to leave the band, but to expose it, expose what he had seen. And one of the threads in this is that not only did he just die in a car crash, but that he was taken out by this cabal, this, Sanhedrin of being a Gentile that couldn't shut up and was a threat to the system and could be replaced. So this is the whole foundation of the I Am a Phony model, that not only was Paul McCartney killed and replaced, but that he was martyred, right? So that is an interesting turn of the whole Paul is dead story. So 9th November 66, this is when Yoko's supposedly first met John Lennon. And that's been picked apart several times. And then the 66 Christmas record is very curious. This was for their fans only in the UK, and it was called Pantomime. Everywhere it's Christmas, right? And a pantomime is you're making something up, right? And there's just a very interesting dialogue in those Christmas records for people that are, interested in this sort of connecting the dots. And then February 13th, 67, John Lennon's song Strawberry Fields Forever and Paul McCartney's song Penny Lane were released in the U.S. as a double-A single. And, of course, Strawberry Fields is one of the first songs to start having the clues that something's different. Nothing's real, but there's nothing to get hung about. If I say what's really going on, they will kill me too. 13 February 1967, George Harrison's song Only a Northern Song is recorded and was supposed to be on the Sgt. Pepper album, but wouldn't be released until much later on the Yellow Submarine soundtrack. And if you want to, George Harrison's take of, there's nobody there. If you're listening to the song and it sounds wrong, if you think the harmonies are going wrong, it is, right? And that was one of their big things is, they had sang with Paul forever and suddenly they're bringing in a new guy. And even though he's very talented, he's just not clicking like they used to all click, and he would be off key, et cetera, that Paul would never be, right? And then, of course, June 67, on the 1st, the Beatles released their Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band album. And it's interesting that the woman who is brought in as a friend of his name escapes me, Peter Blake, her artwork, her name was Joan Hanworth. And so she was brought in with Peter Blake to do the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band graveyard scene, right? And this, the, you know, there was a funeral for the old Beatles, and the new Beatles were being born as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and they're playing. And her thing was, list 50 people that you would like to come to the first concert, and then she made figurines of all of them. And of course, Aleister Crowley is represented three times in this, as long as some very other people, curious people. But her artwork piece on Aunt Gurney Burning, which is a very horrific piece of modern pop art, is in the hospital and was used, or the hospital that Stanley Kubrick shot Eyes Wide Shut. And the story is about, you know, she's very Jewish, comes from a Jewish family, and her father's sister apparently went against the inner circle and was taken out in a very horrific way. And this piece of artwork describes the burning of Aunt Gurney, right? And so it's just an interesting little crossover there of this person who is in the Stanley Kubrick world, but also in the Beatle world, but in the bigger Jewish hidden world of arts and entertainment, right? Then in 25 June 67, the Beatles perform on Our World Satellite, and they do the song All You Need Is Love. Well, it sounds really good, but in the I Am a Phony work, when you play that backwards, it's basically the world singing the law, meaning the law of Aleister Crowley. So that, yeah, this is that getting into that whole backwards masking thing of sending one message, you know, esoterically and one exoterically, right? So you're trying to send a double message, and that's that Zabatean Francus thing of, yeah, Kabbalistically, always look at the opposite of everything, right? And then 27 August 67, Brian Epstein, manager for the Beatles, died in his home in London. Was he taken out, right? Always been speculation. Then November 67, on the 24th, the Beatles released Paul McCartney's Hello, Goodbye with I Am the Walrus by John Lennon on the B-side. And Hello, Goodbye, if you notice, if you play that backwards, is Billy Is Here, which we played during the second break. So this is that, you know, hello. You, I don't know why you say goodbye. I'm saying hello, right? Then in 26 December 67, the Magical Mystery Tour is a one-hour-long British television film starring the Beatles. And there is so much dark material in that that just goes into the whole Pizzagate or Adrenochrome thing when you learn how to see what they were telling you in that movie. It's just very, very dark when you start seeing the symbolism. 22nd November 68, the Beatles released their double album, The White Album. Then in December of 68 is when the Zodiac Killer appears at Christmas time. And what's very interesting in the I Am a Phony material is there's all of these reference that there is some connection to Billy Martin, a.k.a. Sir Bill, Echo, 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 and the Zodiac Killer crimes. And then 15th May 1969, Terry Knight's single St. Paul enters at number 31 in the Music Guide for the week. And this was months before the Paul Is Dead started. So what's interesting about Terry Knight's song is that is the only song that is in the Paul McCartney, John Lennon catalog under their publishing company that they didn't perform, right? So they basically had this song from this guy put in their catalog, and there was all this money basically promoting that, this song about St. Paul. You didn't listen, St. Paul. So when you call somebody a saint, it means they've been martyred. And so it's just a curious turn of phrase. You didn't listen, Now you've been martyred. 8th, 10th of August, 1609 is when you had the Tate-LaBianca murders by the Manson family. This is the whole helter-skelter thing in California. And then October 69, the Beatles release Abbey Road. And on the 12th of October, this is when the ABC radio station, WKNR, gets the phone call about Paul is dead. And this is when Revolution number 9 is backwards, Turn Me On, Dead Man, and Strawberry Fields has the I Buried Paul. And so this is where it started, and it just escalated. And then by the 23rd, 24th, Mockingbird Media in the USA and all over was doing a full push to say Paul is not dead. This is all just, you know, rubbish. Pay no attention to it. So it was interesting it got that much push or momentum that quickly. And then in April 10th, 1970, this guy who calls himself Paul McCartney quit the Beatles. He released his solo album on the 20th of April called McCartney. And it's interesting, the symbolism is life is a bowl of cherries. So he puts the death image of a spilt bowl of cherries on his album cover. And all of his material has lots of Aleister Crowley type symbolism in it, if you know what to look for. January 5th, 1976. Mal Evans, the longtime road manager and roadie and bodyguard for the Beatles, is shot dead in Los Angeles after he was threatening to release his diary exposing the Beatles and all the stuff that was going on. And the 8th of December, 1980, John Lennon is shot in New York at 40 years old. And then in 1995 is when the Beatle anthology series started coming out. And what's interesting is in 96, when the second one came out, they were all on the trucks ready to go when at the last minute, Sir Bill bought up the entire inventory, had them all destroyed and remastered, removing the original track 12, which is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band reprise, and Apple Star, It Was a Fake Mustache, which you heard earlier, the I Am a Phony version. But there are actually copies online, and you can hear the original that was removed. And it cost him millions of dollars to do that, but he just didn't want that song out there. Then 29 October 96, the Beatle Anthology 3. This had, each one had a different song. And the I Am a Phony group has basically done all the songs backwards. And I used to sing with Paul, That's Real Love. So anyway, so those are just some of the things about the Paul is Dead on this Palm Sunday. So I hope everyone enjoyed the special Bucket of Rocks. You've been listening to Robert Ravolt's Incendiary Radio. Until next time, I'm Frederick C. Blackburn, Blackbird 9. I'll see you all at the rendezvous. We used to sing, Paul, we used to sing, got to miss. Work for burn or we will task. One eye out, mom's enough.
Network, because you can handle the truth.